I'm honored to have a true powerhouse in the speaking world, in the world of professional speaking. And this is Grant Baldwin. He's got over a decade of experience and he's delivered over 400 keynote speeches and presentations to audiences ranging from just a couple people in the room to over 13,000 people, all here to witness his expertise. And so we have the honor and privilege of sitting with him today. And not only is he a seasoned speaker, but Grant also shares his wealth of knowledge, and he hosts a globally recognized podcast. You may have heard of it before, The Speaker Lab. And on his show, he really works to guide aspiring speakers to help them start, build, and grow their speaking business so that they can take and start living life on their own terms too. So we're going to dive into the art and the business of professional speaking, and we'll probably talk a little bit about how podcasting has a part to do with that as well, of course, and just really how he's created this incredible speaking community now of others who are starting to get out there and just share their impact and their mission with the world. So thank you so much for being here. Welcome, Grant.
Thanks, Jamie. Appreciate you letting me hang out with you. This is going to be fun.
Yeah, of course. I'm curious what it means for you in your life now to be aligned with your purpose in your profession.
Yeah. So I think, purpose is definitely one of those things that, I don't know that you necessarily like wake up on some morning and like, I have this, light bulb, eureka, epiphany type of moment. I think if anything, it's kind of, incremental steps of bravery of just kind of figuring it out of what that might look like. And so, I've got three daughters and, they're 17, 15, 13. And so as they get older and like specifically our 17-year-old should be 18 in a few months and just trying to figure out like, well, what's next, and she's not going to wake up one day and like have it all figured out. And so, I think for all of us, like each day is a day of kind of self-discovery and figuring out what are the things that I like, what am I good at? What do I enjoy? How does those things translate into perhaps my career, whether that's, working with some other company or doing my own thing, or, ultimately what does that look like? And so, I've heard this analogy before that a lot of times, it's kind of like driving a car at night. When you're driving a car at night, you can literally only see a few feet in front of you, but you can travel hundreds and hundreds of miles that way. And so much of life is like that. Like the reality is like, no matter, we're recording this at the beginning of a new year, and no matter how much goal planning and goal setting we do. And I think there's elements of that are important. Like we have no idea what the next few weeks, months, years look like. As a quick example, there's a friend and mentor of mine, and he recently just shared this is about a month ago. He is in his 70s, I believe, and I felt some pain, went to the hospital, very healthy guy, found out he had like very, very advanced pancreatic cancer. And the doctors at the time said, hey, you have, about 6 months to live. And that has accelerated down to probably just a few weeks. And I don't say that to say like be morbid or anything, but just the reality of just like, man, life is valuable. Life is precious. You have no clue what the next several, weeks, months, years of life look like. We've all at this point, couple years removed from the pandemic and COVID, is like nobody predicted that or could have anticipated how that would have impacted our lives and our careers and our families and all that has taken place. And so I think it's difficult to say, hey, everybody knows exactly what their purpose is going to be and they're super clear on that without necessarily understanding and knowing what does the future hold and how do the things that will continue to take place, how do those continue to shape and impact us.
I love that answer. It's so true. Yeah. So just looking at the headlights or let them guide you just a couple feet away. That's all we need to worry about.
Yeah.
Love it. So you have had this remarkable journey in public speaking. Can you share a bit with the audience here just to share how you got started? What pivotal moments and events kind of shaped this path for you to becoming a seasoned speaker?
Yeah. And so, if we go way back when I was in high school, I was really involved in my local church and my youth pastor had a big impact on my life. And I was like, I want to do that. Like that seemed really cool. It just seemed like a really rewarding type of career profession. I kind of felt like if I could make the kind of impact in others' lives that he had made in my life, that seemed you know, satisfying and gratifying. And so that was kind of the path I was on. So I actually went to Bible college, and actually while I was in college, I worked for a guy who was a professional speaker. And so I kind of got to see a little bit behind the scenes of what that was like, and helping him with the business and logistics and travel and contract and that sort of thing. And then as a, I was a youth pastor at a local church, and that gave me a lot of opportunities to speak. And speaking was one of those things I really enjoyed. I felt like I was decent at it. I wanted to do more of it, but I just didn't really know, like, how does this work? You know, like, how do you actually find gigs, and what do you speak about? Who hires speakers, and how do you get started? And, you know, it just feels like the speaking industry feels like this mysterious black box. And so at the time, this was about 17, 18 years ago or so, there weren't any podcasts on this. There weren't any books or resources or courses or coaches or anybody really talking about this. So I found myself like emailing other speakers, harassing other speakers, stalking them, kind of pick your brain sort of stuff, and like learning a couple things, and started booking a couple gigs, and eventually, you know, some more gigs and more gigs. And, you know, it kind of evolved into the point where I was speaking full time and was doing about 60, 70 gigs a year, and had a lot of people were asking me the same questions that I was asking, you know, like, hey, how did you get started, and how do you become a speaker, and what do you speak about? And so I started doing some coaching training around that. And that really evolved into what we do today with the Speaker Lab, which is a coaching and training program and company for people who are interested in speaking, learning about speaking, wanting to build a business as a speaker. And so that's the core of what we do today. But yeah, ultimately it started again, kind of these progressive iterations of what this could look like. But ultimately started, you know, even back in high school, of going like, hey, there's a speaker that I identify with, that I relate with, that has made an impact on me. What would that look like for me to do the same for with others?
Mm. I love the evolution of that. Went from you speaking on stage to the audience, and now you're helping speakers all over the world do the same. I mean, your impact now is, I mean, you're touching more lives than I'm sure you can even imagine.
Yeah. I mean, right, it's certainly like satisfying and rewarding of, you know, as a speaker, I really, really enjoyed what I was doing, but I knew it was also, I had a friend say one time, like, speaking is a high paying manual labor job, in that the nature of speaking is you get on the stage and you speak, you know, it's fun. Like, you know, a lot of times people will clap for you, and people will stand up and clap for you, or people want to take pictures with you, or want your autograph. You know, it's like this weird type of pseudo celebrity type deal, and it's super fun. But the nature of it is you have to get on a plane, you have to leave your family, you have to go somewhere to perform the task. And so it's kind of similar to, you know, a surgeon. You know, a surgeon makes really good money for what it is that they do, but they got to show up and do surgery. And so I knew in order to grow as a speaker, my options were either I needed to do more gigs, which just meant being gone more, which wasn't really appealing, or I needed to increase my fees. And at the time in the market and industry that I was in, I was kind of on the upper level of what I felt comfortable charging in that space, and what you could really command in that space. And so but I had enough people who were asking me, like, I want to be a speaker. How do I do that? And so that's when, again, we started doing some coaching training around that. And so fast forward, I know we've worked with, you know, thousands and thousands of speakers. And yeah, I think it, in some ways, it's kind of like the rock that hits the pond and the ripples that go out. And so I know that the speakers that we work with who are going to speak to their audiences of how, hey, we were able to take, you know, be a tiny, tiny little part of that and facilitating that or helping to make that happen. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, it's incredibly, you know, satisfying and rewarding. I think we could every single one of us, like we could all think about like speakers that have impacted us and something that they said, totally, and something that, or maybe an interaction that we had with them off stage and how it impacted or shaped our lives in some way. And so to help other speakers to experience that in the future, or to provide that opportunity for audiences that they speak to, is incredibly rewarding and satisfying. So speaking is one of those things that, like, I'm certainly biased, but it is an amazing industry where people can make a huge impact, can make a lot of money, can make a real difference in the work that they're doing. It's one of those things that has been around longer than either of us have been alive, survived generations and of wars and pandemics and depressions and 9/11 and, you know, all the things that may go along with those. And regardless of what happens in the future with economy, technology, AI, whatever it may be, like, humans still love to get together with other human beings. You know, we saw that with the pandemic. As soon as the pandemic was over, as best as possible, like, people were craving to get together with other human beings. And so we are always going to be drawn toward that and hearing from and learning from a speaker in that type of setting. So yeah, the speaking industry is just it's a really, really phenomenal industry.
Absolutely. And I'm curious, you know, given the dynamic nature of the speaking industry, how have you seen it evolve over the years, and how do you feel it's going to continue to evolve? Are there emerging trends or shifts that you feel like speakers are going to begin to be navigating in their careers?
Yeah, I mean, like, for example, one thing that we saw a lot throughout the pandemic is, prior to the pandemic, like, virtual speaking wasn't really a thing. It wasn't something that speakers really took seriously. It wasn't something that event planners really took seriously. And then the pandemic comes along and it really just kind of like halted everything. Mm-hmm. And so everybody's events were canceled. Nobody's booking events. And like, literally everything comes to a stop. And so what happened at that point was, the only option, the only game in town, was to lean into virtual. And so what we've seen happen, you know, a few years later, is that virtual events have come in, not in replacement of, but in addition to in-person events. So a lot of times what you're seeing now is organizations and groups that maybe had in-person events are still doing in-person events, but they're also doing either hybrid events, where it's kind of a combination, or they're going to be doing some standalone virtual events, maybe as kind of a supplemental or an additional resource to some of the live events that they're doing, or kind of in between some of the live events. Mm. So it's, in many ways, it's created a lot more opportunities than what previously existed. And so I think that's definitely been a big shift that's taken place over the past couple of years. You know, into the future, there's always going to be technology evolution in terms of like how a speaker may present their content and utilizing multimedia. You know, there was a presentation I saw recently where the speaker was using like some almost like a holographic type of imaging on the stage. Wow. And it was, you know, just kind of just a unique type of experience. And so, you know, there's an element of that. But at the end of the day, like, the core part of being a speaker is having a really, really clear message and being able to really clearly articulate that and communicate that to an audience in a way that gets them to take action or change or do something different, you know, personally or professionally or in their business or whatever it may be. And so I think like the core elements of speaking, there's going to be nuances that will shift and change, but the core elements of speaking, you know, those things will continue to remain the same into the future.
Mm, okay. Yeah, I've definitely seen a lot of virtual events happening. And I think it's such a great way for you to avoid having to travel for both parties. So I love that the world's shifting in that way, at least for some things. I hope the in-person events.
Yeah, I mean, there's pros and cons to it, for sure. You know, there is, you know, we're recording this virtually right now. And so it creates the opportunity where both of us can be, you know, in our homes or wherever, and, you know, we can make that work. You know, whether you are doing a, you know, a webinar or a virtual presentation, where you can have people who are all over the world who can tune in. Now, it also, like, it doesn't replace the in-person connection. You know, nothing compares to hugs and high fives and handshakes and just being together with other human beings. And in-person time, like, it changes the dynamic of relationships. It brings people closer together. Otherwise, you know, like, old families would just exist over Zoom, but like, that doesn't work. You know, over the holidays, we want to be around the people that we love. Mm-hmm. We want to hang out with them and socialize with them. And so it's so important to have those in-person experiences in addition to the virtual experiences as, you know, a speaker and as an audience.
Yeah. And that's actually bringing up a point of how we got connected in the first place, was at Podcast Movement, where I was around your team and I got to feel their energy and just see how they just hold your company vision to such a high standard. And they got me excited about the Speaker Lab. And I actually had a chance to read your book as well from and because of that event, and actually see one of the students that has gone through your program speak on this stage. And I actually, funny enough, am using your pen right now because of that experience in person. And so now we're kind of taking the physical and bringing it virtual now here together, right, which is really exciting. So I think there's a way to kind of mesh both of the worlds beautifully.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And again, there, you know, there's pros and cons with both. And so, to your point, sometimes, you know, taking a in-person experience and deepening that with virtual is powerful, and vice versa as well. One thing that we've seen a lot of times with speakers is, you know, oftentimes with speakers is that they may go speak and, you know, they go speak, and that's kind of the end of the engagement or the transaction. And it is kind of transactional. Whereas when virtual kind of came on the scene, it creates these opportunities for speakers to kind of go deeper with audiences. And so they may say, hey, I'm going to do an in-person, you know, keynote or kickoff with your company. And then for the next 6 months, let's do a once a month Zoom with them so we can go deeper in some of the content. So one, it helps to further create some stickiness with the content, the material for it to really go deeper with that audience. But also from a speaker standpoint, it's an opportunity to increase and drive revenue, where, you know, you go from just kind of a one-off, one and done type of event or presentation to, now let's do something for, you know, several months or a year or whatever period of time there that deepens the relationship. And again, kind of increases the value and the revenue that, that the speaker may derive from that.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And it also helps whoever's in the audience actually integrate those lessons long term with the implementation as well, I'm sure. So you were starting to mention that clear messaging is one of the most important things that a speaker could have, especially when they're giving a keynote. How do you go about clarifying what that message would be to hold the most impact for the audience?
Yeah, I mean, this is definitely like one of the biggest challenges that speakers have is oftentimes whenever we start working with speakers, they just say, hey, I just want to speak, you know, and who do I speak to or what do I speak about? I don't know. Who do I speak to? I speak to people. My message is for everybody. And what do I speak about? I don't know. Like, what do you want me to speak about? I can speak about anything. Like that just doesn't work. And so what we're trying to do is help speakers go from here's who I want to speak to, everybody and anybody, and what I want to speak about, anything and everything. And we want to really narrow that down to something very, very targeted and specific. And so inside the book that you mentioned there, The Successful Speaker, and inside all of the coaching and the training that we do, we walk through this 5-step framework that we call the Speaker Success Roadmap. And it makes the acronym SPEAK, S-P-E-A-K. And the first part of that process, S, is selecting a problem to solve. So there's two key questions you have to ask is, who are you speaking to and what's the problem that you're solving for that audience? Now, it's counterintuitive because, again, we kind of assume that the more people we can speak to and the more things we can speak about, the more opportunities we will have. But the opposite is actually the case. Like the more narrow, the more specific, the more targeted we are, the easier it is to find the right type of audiences and to find the right type of events that we would be a good fit for. And so the way we always like to describe it is you want to be the steakhouse and not the buffet. The steakhouse, not the buffet. Meaning like if we're going out to eat and we're looking for a good steak, like we have a choice. We could go to a buffet where steak is one of 100 things that they offer and they're all mediocre, or we could go to a steakhouse where they do one thing, but they do that one thing really, really well. So they're not trying to do lasagna. They're not trying to do pasta or sushi or, you know, sandwiches or whatever. Like they do steak and that is it. They're not trying to appeal to vegetarians. Like we're a steakhouse. This is what we do. And so you see so many speakers, and this isn't exclusive to just speakers. This is true with a lot of companies and personal brands of saying, I need to try to reach everybody and anybody. But the bigger, broader, vaguer you go, the less appealing you become to the right type of audience. Another way I like to think about this is, let's imagine, Jamie, like God forbid you had some type of like brain issue and you had to go see a doctor. Like you have a choice. You could go to your local family medical doctor. Like they're a doctor. They went to med school. They probably know more about the brain than you or I do. But let's say you needed brain surgery. Like if they've never done brain surgery, I probably don't want them cutting me up versus a doctor who is a brain surgeon. Like that's all they do, you know? So if you have a broken leg, you don't go to them. You know, if you have a runny nose, you don't go to them. You got a sore throat, you don't go to them. You got COVID, you don't go to them. But you got a brain issue. Like that's who you go to because they're good at this one specific thing. And so this is the same thing that's true for speakers and entrepreneurs in general, is solve one specific problem for one specific audience versus trying to be all things to all people, which just doesn't work.
Yeah, very true. Specialist versus generalist.
Absolutely. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So then once you have your messaging in place, it's clear. You're solving your one problem for your one audience. What's next?
Yeah. So if we go back to that speaker success roadmap, that speak framework, mm-hmm. that first part, again, the S is selecting a problem to solve. The P is to prepare your talk. So being really, really clear on what the solution is and how you're going to provide that solution. So you're going to do that in person, or you're going to do that virtually, or you're going to do keynotes or workshops or breakouts or seminars. Like again, there's pros and cons with all of them, but being really, really clear about how you're going to best provide the solution to that particular audience. And maybe what we can do is I'll go through the rest of that speak framework here, and then we can kind of jump in wherever you'd like. So again, selecting a problem to solve, prepare your talk. The E is to establish yourself as the expert. Establish yourself as the expert. So two key marketing assets that you need. Number one is you need a website, and number two is you need a demo video. So a website, in this day and age, if you don't have a website, you don't exist. It's hard for people to take you seriously. And then a demo video is basically, think of it like almost like a movie trailer. And so a movie trailer is, they're going to take a 90-minute, a two-hour movie. They're going to boil it down to 2 or 3 minutes. And within those 2 or 3 minutes, you have an idea of the plot, the theme, the genre, who's in it. And the goal of the movie trailer and the goal of the demo video is to make people want to see more. So an event planner, a decision maker, someone who's considering hiring you as a speaker, they are in the risk mitigation business. Meaning, if I'm going to hire you and I'm going to give you money and I'm going to put you up on stage in front of my people and in front of my boss or committee or my board, and I'm going to hand you a microphone, and I'm going to let you talk to them, I got to feel pretty confident that you're going to do a good job. You're not going to embarrass me. You're not going to say anything inappropriate. You're not going to say anything disrespectful. You're not going to say anything rude or condescending. Like, it's just a big, big, big risk when you hand someone a microphone and put them up in front of a room of your people. And so that demo video gives someone the ability to, I don't need to see an entire 30, 45, 60 minute talk of yours. I just need to see a couple of minutes to kind of get a feel for, is this the kind of person that we would feel comfortable having at our event? You know, another way to think about this is kind of like music. Like, there's a lot of different types of music, and maybe one type of music someone loves and someone else hates. And it's not that one's better or worse than the other. It's just kind of what that person is interested in. So for an event planner who's going like, hey, I can look at two solid speakers, but maybe just one of them kind of resonates a little bit more with what we may be looking for. And so that's what that demo video does, is it kind of reduces some of the risk, that risk mitigation for the event planner, that gives them some confidence. So like, yeah, I've seen enough of this speaker to just feel confident that they're going to do a good job for our audience. So website, demo video are very important. Next part of the process, A, is to acquire paid speaking gigs. Now, oftentimes this is the part we want to fast forward to. Like, you know, I'll figure out who I speak to, what I speak about. I'll figure out what my messaging is. I'll figure out my website, demo video. Just tell me how to book gigs. But if you don't have these other pieces in place first, it's really, really difficult to be able to book gigs. And when we get to this point, this is a mistake that speakers make, is they become much more passive rather than proactive. And so meaning that some speakers will say, hey, I got my website, I got my video, I know who I speak to, what I speak about. I just sit back and I wait for the phone to ring. And like, that doesn't work. Like, your mom is thrilled with your new website. She's going to tell both of her friends. Nobody else cares. And so at this point, we have to, again, be much more proactive about getting the messaging out. So when we're clear on who we speak to, what we speak about, you know, reaching out, identifying potential events, starting conversations with them, following up, and again, being much more proactive rather than just like, I just listed it, you know, I mentioned it on a Facebook post, I mentioned it on LinkedIn. Like, again, nobody's going to look at it, nobody's going to click on it. So you have to, again, continually be staying top of mind for people that may be looking for speakers like you. And then the last part of the process, K, is know when to scale. Meaning, a lot of people who are interested in speaking are also interested in writing a book or coaching or consulting or doing a podcast or doing a course. And all those things are well and good, and you can do all those things, but you can't do all those things at once. So something's going to come first, something's going to come last. You've got to be clear about how does speaking fit into the mix of everything else that you want to be doing. And so there are some speakers or personal brands, I would say, that do, you know, 50, 75, 100 plus gigs a year, and speaking is like a very large percentage of what it is that they do, and that's fine. And other speakers and personal brands say, hey, I've got a good thing going. I have a podcast, I have a course, I do some coaching or consulting or whatever it may be, and I'd be interested in doing 5 gigs or 10 gigs a year. But that's also fine, totally acceptable. And so again, it's not that one's better or worse than the other, but you got to be clear about kind of how speaking fits into the mix of everything else that you want to be doing. So again, that's the overall kind of big picture there. Speak framework, that speaker success roadmap that we teach for how to build and grow a speaking business.
I love how simple it is, but how if you just follow the steps and you implement, then you are a professional speaker. And I'm curious on the business side of things, like beyond the stage, I know there's business things happening in the back end because you're now a professional speaker booking paid gigs. How do you navigate that side of things? Are there any insights for speakers who are looking to build a sustainable speaking business?
Yeah, I think a big thing is like you just have to treat it like a business. And so you cannot put in amateur effort and expect professional results. Mm-hmm. And so here's an example. I like playing pickleball. You ever played pickleball, Jamie?
Never. I would love to though.
That's super fun. All right. You just find a old person's home and they're probably playing a bunch of pickleball and it's fun to play with them. They'll kick your butt. And so I play pickleball a couple of days a week with several friends, and we got a group of, you know, a whole bunch of us that will play, and some combination of people show up a couple of days a week and we'll play. And we're all fairly evenly matched, but there's also some people that are just significantly better at the game than I am specifically. And one of it is like they spend a lot more time, energy, and effort practicing, drilling, watching videos, getting a coach, you know, going to tournaments. Like they just take it way more seriously. And so I can't look at their results and say, well, like, well, that's not fair. How is it that they're better than me or that they're doing this better than me? Like if I'm not willing to put in the energy and effort that those people are. And so the same thing is true for speakers. There's going to be people who come into speaking and be like, yeah, you know, like I've always kind of been intrigued by speaking. And so, yeah, I'll kick the tires on this and kind of dabble in it and stick my toe in it. And then if I don't get like major results, then I'm shocked. It's like, but that doesn't, the efforts that you're desiring or the results that you're desiring aren't matching up with the efforts that you're putting in. And so the same thing is true with like, with anything, you know, with your health, you know, at the beginning of a new year, you're like, I want to lose, you know, 10 pounds, but I'm not going to really exercise that. I'm going to get a gym membership and I'm going to buy some new running shoes, but you know, I'm going to go walk for 10 minutes and then be surprised that I'm not losing a bunch of weight. You know, it's just like, well, it just doesn't work like that. And so I think the biggest thing is you can absolutely be successful as a speaker. And there are a lot of speakers that we worked with that make six figures, multiple six figures, some even up near seven figures as speakers, but they've also put in a significant amount of work to get those results. And so if you want to be a professional speaker, you have to put in professional effort. And if you want to just dabble in it, that's totally fine, but don't be surprised with the outcome and the results that you're receiving.
That's huge. And I'm curious then back to your story, what kind of effort and work and hours were you putting in as you were building your own speaking business, but then transferring that into your business of coaching speakers? What did that process look like?
Yeah. So for a little while there, you're kind of doing both things. And so when I left my job going way back, when I left my job as a youth pastor, my wife was pregnant with our first child. And we had, she was due in a couple of months. We had no savings. We had nothing to fall back on, or anything. And so, I was doing a couple of things. I was working at a security company selling like door to door home security systems. I was working at a fine dining restaurant as a server. None of these were like career aspirations, but just kind of like, I'm just trying to like put food on the table and make ends meet and buy diapers sort of thing. And so did that for a while. And then, you know, would book a gig and then book another gig and book another gig. And, so in between, you know, doing the security sales stuff or doing the restaurant thing, like I'm working hard on the business, you know, nights and weekends, just grinding on this. And so as I started to book some more speaking gigs, then I was like, okay, now I can, you know, let's stop doing the security sales. We'll just do, you know, the restaurant thing a couple nights a week. And okay, as I book more gigs, okay, now we don't have to do the restaurant thing. Let's just do the speaking thing. And so we did that for a little while to make that transition. But the same thing happened then fast forward where I got to a point where it's going, hey, I'm doing 60, 70 speaking gigs and I want to start doing some of this coaching training stuff for speakers. So you're having to find the time. And so for a little while, it almost feels like you're doing two full-time jobs while you're building up the second thing in order to make the leap. Because I would not advise and I would not recommend for someone saying like, hey, I want to be a speaker, so I'm going to quit my job on Friday and hopefully on Monday it all works out. Like don't make that mistake. But instead start like find the time in your schedule to put into it. And again, the results that you're going to get are going to be relative to the effort and energy that you're putting into it. Every single one of us can find 5 hours a week, 10 hours a week, 20 hours a week. And you can do that, like just cutting out some of like the normal things that you're just probably just wasting time on as like just a normal human being. And so for a little while there, again, you're putting in the energy and effort while also doing the other thing just to eat and live indoors. But over time, then you can again kind of cut back on that to the point where I was doing 60, 70 gigs and like, okay, now I can say no to a couple gigs because this other thing's going well and I can cut back on some additional gigs and or be more selective about which gigs I'm doing. And so that, all that can happen. But again, you just have to be intentional about what you are building and what you're working towards.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Especially if it's important to you, you'll find the time, you'll make it. It's just tuning down the areas and reprioritizing. Sounds like that was a big part of your journey. Sure. So then I'm curious for you, you know, back in 2016, you launched a certain Speaker Lab podcast, which we were talking about it before we jumped in here. I listened to your very first episode, which was neat to hear a bit more of your story. But what inspired you to bring the mic online and to hit off that virtual stage of your own?
Yeah. So actually, if we go back a couple of years before that, so again, I got to a point where I was doing a lot of gigs. I really enjoyed it. It was a lot of fun, but I just kind of felt a little bored and restless and kind of like, all right, what's next? And so in early 2014, started listening to podcasts and stumbled across some podcasts. And I thought, hey, I think I could do that. And so in 2014, I actually started a podcast called How Did You Get Into That? And it's still up there. It's in the archives. And so I had a lot of people asking me, like, as a speaker, hey, you're a speaker. That's kind of cool. How did you get into that? And I found myself asking other people that same question. Oh, you're XYZ. Like, how did you get in? That's kind of fascinating. It's like, that'd be kind of a cool podcast. It's just you're interviewing people who have unique types of careers and just asking them, how did you get into that? And so at the time, I was doing a lot of speaking in the education space with high schools, colleges about careers. What do you want to do with your life? What do you want to be when you grow up? I was like, man, this podcast would fit really, really well with that. And so I did that for about a year and a half. We did, I think, almost 150 episodes or so, just asking people, how did you get into that? And then in early 2015 is when we started doing some of the coaching training around the speaking stuff. That started to go well. And so as that went well, then kind of late 2015, I kind of had this crossroads of going, okay, I'm doing a lot of speaking. I've got this career podcast that's fun. I've got a lot of speaker training that I'm doing, and I see a lot of potential that I'd like to lean into that more. So what we ended up doing was saying, okay, we're going to start what became the Speaker Lab. So we started the Speaker Lab in January of 2016. And then in December 2015, right before then, is when we ended the How Did You Get Into That podcast. January 2016 is when we started the Speaker Lab podcast. And really kind of like tried to put our flag in the ground of like, hey, this is a topic we want to be known for and that we can teach people on and we want to be an expert for. And so, yeah, fast forward, we've been doing the podcast. We do one episode a week. We've been doing that for, I guess 7 years now, 8 years, whatever that math is. And at this point, I think we're closing in on 500 episodes. And so it's been a great, podcasting has been a great tool to network, to connect with other people, to share content. It was started in some ways initially where someone would ask me a question and I can, if you ask me, tell me about, speaking fees and how do you figure out what to charge? Like I can give you, my answer, but it was also helpful to say, hey, here's a 30-minute episode we did on that topic. It's going to be way more meaty than like, just go listen to that. And so having some resources that I could kind of point to and help people with was beneficial. So yeah, I've been in the podcasting world for, 9, 10 years, whatever that math is. And it's been a lot of fun.
Oh, I love that. And I noticed that you do accept audience questions, and at least in the first episodes that I was listening to, you used to do that. Is that something you still do? And if so, I'm curious, what do you feel your top questions are that you find yourself answering about the topic?
Yeah, we don't do it a ton. We just haven't been as intentional on it as far as like taking soliciting audience questions. But yeah, it was definitely something that we did early on there. I think like most people that you get a lot of the same questions, totally. Questions around how do you get started and what do you speak about and who hires speakers and how much do you charge and just kind of, just the basics of how does it work? And so, yeah, there's definitely like a lot of questions around that. Some of them may be nuanced questions of, I'm interested in speaking fees, but not just generically, like I want to speak at, nonprofits, do nonprofits pay? And, I want to speak to corporations. Can I charge more at corporations? Some nuances like that, but I mean, like a lot of things, you get a lot of the same questions, but it's still like, I think in a lot of ways, the podcast and overall the Speaker Lab itself are resources that I wish I had when I got started. Cause I had all the same questions. Yeah. So just like, I always felt like I had the potential, but I needed the plan. I had the potential, but I need the plan. Meaning like, I think I can do this. Like I'm not the world's best speaker. I'm not the world's worst speaker, but there's something there. I can do this. But if someone can just explain to me the mechanics of, do this, do step A and step B and step C, and that'll get you going. Like, just tell me what to do and I can execute on it. And so that was, I think a big part of and a big driver to starting the Speaker Lab is going, what is it that I wish I had when I got started? And how do I help speakers that were where I was when I was getting going, feeling like they've got the potential, they just need the plan. So how do we give them that plan?
Oh, I love that. It seems very actionable. And especially if you're creating a resource bank that people can refer back to, that's only, going back to 2016, that's years of content that you have that I could go binge from day one, which is incredible. Yeah. I mean, it's priceless. So I'm curious for you. We've talked about more the tactics and the strategy stuff, and you said a lot of the questions that you get, it sounds like, are around that. But what about the mindset? I mean, professional speaking, I think it's one of the scariest things for most people, like their number one fear.
Sure.
How do you overcome that and help them develop the mindset of a professional speaker? What does that look like?
Yeah, for sure. And you're exactly right that there are, like, you know, the nuances and the mechanics of things that you need to do, but also just kind of like going into it, realizing like, this is hard work. This is just because you want to be a speaker doesn't mean you're going to magically become a speaker, and you can't just close your eyes really tight and click your heels together and hope that this all works out. Like, it requires a lot of work and effort, and you just got to be ready to do that work. As far as like the question of the mindset of getting up on stage and not being, you know, overcome by your fears or anxieties or whatever it may be, like, yeah, that's very much a real thing. Like, most there are certainly studies that say like that speaking is you know, most commonly the people's greatest fear. There's certainly people that, like, they love speaking. I would love to get up on stage. My wife is an example of someone who's like, nope, absolutely not. Don't you dare ever call me up there for your little dog and pony show. Oh, absolutely not. She loves to sit in the audience. She's my biggest fan, but she does not want to get up there and speak, which is fine. And so I think oftentimes what happens is it's really easy to confuse nerves with excitement and adrenaline. So if you think back to some of your biggest moments in life, you know, whether you were getting ready to take a big test, or you had a big interview, or, you know, you were asking someone out on a date, or you were proposing, or you're, you know, giving birth, you know, like these big major lifetime milestones, you think about how you felt probably kind of similar to what it's like before you speak. You feel these kind of like butterflies and nerves. And oftentimes it's not necessarily nerves in the sense of like, oh my gosh, this is going to be awful. But oftentimes it's just like the adrenaline, the excitement, the body's way of just kind of saying like, hey, like, heads up, this is important. Like, don't screw this up, you know? So if anything, like when you feel that, it's a way of saying like, this matters, it's important, which is a good thing. You know, if you didn't get nervous, if you didn't feel anything before you spoke, it would kind of communicate like, I don't really care how this goes, which is not great. That's not a good spot to be in. Like, you should be doing something different. And so how do you make sure that you get to a point where those nerves, that adrenaline, that excitement doesn't just become like debilitating and overwhelming? I think a big thing that you can do is that you spend the time practicing and you put in the reps. You know, the way that you get better as a speaker is you speak. The way that you get better as a podcaster as you podcast. The way you get better as a writer as you write. Whatever the thing is, you have to do the craft and become and continue to again put in the reps. And over time, you start to build the confidence. So even though I've given hundreds and hundreds of presentations, like, I may still get some nerves, but I also feel like, no, I've done this before. Like, I'm confident in what I can do. And it's just kind of like, all right, let's get up there and get the ball rolling here. In the same way that a professional athlete, before they play in a big game, they probably feel some of those same, you know, nerves, butterflies, adrenaline and excitement. And it's not that they're like, oh my gosh, I forgot how to play this sport. It's like, no, like, they're a professional at the highest level. They've been doing this thing for decades, perhaps, even back to elementary, but they also just feel the adrenaline of the moment. But they spend a lot of time practicing, preparing, rehearsing. And so the same thing is true for a speaker. The best speakers on the planet don't just like get up and wing it, and I'm just going to kind of scribble some thoughts on a napkin and hope it just works out. Like, no, like, it really, like, every word and sentence is really thought about and crafted. And so by the time they get up, it may look natural. It may look like they're just winging it. It may look like they're just shooting from the hip, but there's so much intentionality that has gone into it that by the time they get up, like, they are a professional at what it is that they are doing. And so the same thing is true for a speaker, is to really spend the time practicing, preparing behind the scenes. That'll give you a level of confidence when you get up on stage.
That's huge. And I'm curious because, I believe it's Tony Robbins, right? He always has his little trampoline and he jumps on it before he goes out. Do you have anything that you do like that that is kind of different that you would do before you go on stage to just...
Not necessarily. Like, every speaker is going to be kind of different. You know, some speakers are going to, you know, they want to do something that kind of hypes the body up and jumping around or exercise. Some of them listen to music. Some of them just prefer to like silence and just kind of sit and meditate, perhaps. A lot of times what I'm doing is I'm kind of going over my notes and just kind of, all right, what's the first, you know, let me think through my first, you know, couple minutes here. If I'm going to, you know, do this, and then I'm going to tell this story, and then here's my transition, and I'm going to lead into this point, and kind of what are those first couple minutes? Because no, once I kind of get flowing, then I'm good. But really just making sure I feel confident with those first few minutes. So it kind of depends on the speaker and what it is that they do. But everybody's a little different there.
Yeah, that's really interesting. So you've done over 400 keynotes. Are they all slightly different, or do you have like one solid keynote that you would deliver slightly differently depending on the audience
Yeah, probably
period?
much more of the latter. I think that one mistake is the speakers assume, okay, if you're going to deliver however many talks, like each one of those is completely unique. And you have to think about like assuming that you're talking to different audiences on a regular basis, then you rather than creating like a unique talk, which takes an enormous amount of work, what you want to do is kind of create one kind of staple talk, and then you're kind of improving that as you go. So think about it like a chef at a restaurant, for example. You know, when they're making like their signature dish, they're not going to nail it the first time. And they're not also creating a brand new menu every single time, people come to the restaurant. Like they're creating something and then they're kind of testing it, iterate. Okay, I'm going to try that. Okay, I'm going to test this, try this. Okay, I need to cook it a little longer. Okay, we put in too much salt, or it's a little acidic, or it needs a little bit something, needs something sweet, or we're missing something here, or from a plate presentation. Like there's just a lot of testing and trying, because when you're creating a talk, you're making an educated guess. Like, I think this is funny. I think this will make sense. I think this will resonate. I think this will pull on heartstrings. But like, you don't really know until you get in front of an audience. But when you get in front of an audience, you get that real-time feedback. That is the feedback that informs the talk. Like, okay, this really worked well. This didn't make any sense. They were lost whenever I was talking about this. Or it seemed like people were a little confused when I was talking about this. Maybe I need to tweak some stuff here. Or this worked really well. Maybe I need to move this forward in the presentation. And you get that feedback. So by the time you've given some version of the same talk 100 times, it's really well dialed in. And so an audience wants to see like your best material. They don't want to see like, hey, I'm just going to kind of workshop some stuff and I hope you guys like this and I hope this works. So oftentimes like the speakers that are really, really good at what it is that they do, it's because they've given that presentation or a version of that presentation a lot of times, and it's just become really, really polished. So yeah, spend the time and like have one or two great talks versus like 10 mediocre talks.
Yeah, that's really interesting. You were mentioning this connection with the audience and their feedback. How would one go about doing that? And now on Zoom, I know there's a chat, but what about a podcast where you're speaking to a microphone where you don't necessarily get that feedback right away from an episode?
Yeah, I do think it's very different. Like podcasting is a very different medium than speaking, because you're exactly right. Like we nobody's gonna we, there however many people listen to this, you and I will never watch someone and just sit there and watch them listen to this, because
So
podcasting is
never
very
thought about that.
passive. Yeah, passive. It's a very passive medium. Like people are listening to this while they're at the gym, they're driving their car, they're making dinner, they're doing laundry, they're doing something and kind of listening to this in the background. That's the way I consume podcasts. That's the way most people consume podcasts, right? Whereas
Totally.
with speaking, as a speaker, you are watching people's faces as the content is being delivered. And so it's very, very different. You'll never, we've sold a lot of copies of a book, and I've never watched someone sit and read my book. So I couldn't tell you, how they are like interacting with it real time. If someone reads a blog post or your social media content or watches your YouTube video, like you just don't get the real time feedback that you do with speaking. And so, I think podcasting is a good step in the right direction. If I'm telling a story, for example, like I can get some feedback from you. And do I just feel comfortable and confident in telling this story that I might, try a couple different times and a couple different iterations of via a podcast, and then I might try it on stage because I feel a bit more confident with that. But podcasting is definitely it's just a different medium than speaking.
Yeah, that's really interesting. That feedback element must be so cool, just to see the whole room light up or cheer, stand up and clap. Yeah, that's really exciting.
Yeah, I mean, it's super rewarding because, like, where else? What other career or profession do you do? And then people are like, let me just clap for you because that was really cool. Like you and I may have an amazing podcast here, and like nobody's clapping for us. Like we're never going to see that. Nobody's going to come up, line up, or talk to us afterwards or anything. You're like, hey, that was really cool. Can we take a picture together? Like that's not a thing with this type of medium. And so with speaking, again, getting that real time feedback in the moment is really powerful.
Oh, that's incredible. So then, on your journey, do you have a book that you feel changed your life? Or maybe it was a podcast that you listened to, that you feel would be a valuable resource for someone looking to get into this avenue? And of course, we're going to bring up yours next, but one that helped you on your journey.
Yeah. Let me think here. I mean, so like early on, a big influence for me was Pat Flynn's podcast, Smart Passive Income. So that was one that I listened to that I was like, okay, what's this online business thing and courses and how does this work? And so his podcast early on for me was very, very helpful. You know, since then Pat and I have become good friends and he has, you know, his work's really, really good. So that'd definitely be one to check out. I was trying to think of another podcast. You know, there's a good podcast I listen to currently that's called My First Million. That's a really good one. It's two guys kind of shooting the breeze about all things entrepreneurship and business ideas and getting started. So that's a good podcast. People ought to check out as well.
I will definitely check that out. And then please, will you share a bit about your book and your podcast and where we can find you?
Yeah. So the book is called The Successful Speaker, 5 Steps for Booking Gigs, Getting Paid, Building Your Platform. So definitely check that out on Amazon, Kindle, Audible, wherever. And then that speak framework that we talked about and just expands on that. It goes a lot deeper there. So definitely check that out. And like you said, the podcast is called The Speaker Lab Podcast. We've been doing that for several years now, coming up on 500 episodes. So anything and everything related to speaking, all things speaking, a lot of content there. So that's another great resource to check out.
That'll get someone going. Beautiful. And then is there anything else coming up for you right now that you feel called to share before we wrap things up here?
I mean, everything we do is over at thespeakerlab.com, thespeakerlab.com. We got a lot of free resources there. I mean, we'd certainly have coaching programs if people want to learn more about that and how we can kind of work together and what that would look like. There's information on the site. But also I would remind speakers, like, you don't have to spend a dime with us. We did a podcast interview with a guy a year or two ago during the pandemic. He was interested in speaking. He Googled about becoming a speaker. He came across our podcast. He listened to every single episode and he's like, I just applied it and I just implemented it, did what you told me. In his first year, he made over $100,000 speaking. He never spent a dime with us. Incredible. He just listened to the free podcast, did what we said. And I was like, dude, that's awesome. I wish more people would do that. You know, he took action on it. He implemented it. He applied it. He did it. And he's doing the thing. And we did not make a single dime from that. And so that's totally fine. You know, take the podcast, listen to it. There's a lot of content there. Check it out. But again, if you want to go deeper and work with myself and our team, then there's certainly opportunities to do that. Again, all of that is over at thespeakerlab.com.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for being here and just sharing more of your expertise. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Jamie. Appreciate it.